It's the Talent Talk Podcast, the official podcast of Morehead State University Athletics. A reminder, you can access this podcast on MSUEagles.com, the official website of Eagle Athletics, and a variety of other avenues, including Spotify and Stitcher. You can also access archived episodes on MSUEagles.com/podcasts. Today is episode number 11, and our guest is women's basketball alum Janice Tolles. Janice was a standout member of the Eagle women's basketball program. From her hometown in Pike County to Morehead State, Janice showed steady improvement throughout her athletic career, culminating in her leading MSU in scoring as a senior in 1985-86. Tolles has gone on to a rewarding career with the Jockey Club in Lexington, Kentucky, where she has served for more than 30 years. She also currently serves as the accreditation and grants manager for the nonprofit group Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance. Thank you for listening, and here is this week's show.
Welcome to another edition of Talent Talk. This is episode number 11, and I'm Matt Schabert, your host, and I'm really glad to be joined by Morehead State women's basketball alum, Janice Tolles. And Janice, I appreciate you joining us and being on this episode.
Thank you for having me.
Let's get into a little bit. You're obviously a women's basketball alum and from the Eastern Kentucky area. And what made you choose, when looking back on when you were deciding? Well, first of all, let's go into this. What was your kind of your love for basketball in general first, and then we'll kind of get into what led you in basketball and what led you to Morehead State?
It was just a sport that I just kind of gravitated to. I come from a family of athletes, people that really, really love all sports. And so my grandparents, my aunts, my uncles, cousins, all of us, you know, pretty much participate in some type of sport. So it was kind of, you know, the thing to do, you know, in my small town, because we didn't have a lot of things to do, a lot of places that we could go for activities. So I just gravitated to basketball, and that's just something I continued to, you know, develop and then go on and play, you know, in an organized manner down the road.
So when you think back, you got a chance to play and I guess be kind of a standout on your high school team at Belfry, and then did Morehead State come looking to come kind of recruiting, or what kind of led you to choosing Morehead State to go to college?
Well, I think it was a little bit of both. What happened, I think, as far as exposure for me to the university and vice versa, was me attending the basketball camps, you know, in my early years in my high school career, even maybe in before I was in high school, I attended camps there. We went as a team, and then I went as an individual. So they got to know me and I got to know them. And so I felt like the coach was kind of invested, you know, in me because of that, because he kind of got to see me there where otherwise being the location of where I played and where I went to school, I may not have been able, you know, to be visible to him.
When you think back when you got to Morehead State, what were some of the biggest differences you saw in playing high school basketball and that level? And then all of a sudden jumping in, a lot of times, you know, sometimes you see it now, you have some freshman phenoms but lots of times when you're a freshman, you know, it takes a while for you to get used to the speed. And was that the case with you? And what did you see as the biggest difference in college basketball in that time? And then when you played high school basketball, where you're kind of like leading stats and all that stuff, and then you get to college and you have to kind of make that adjustment.
I think just the level of talent, you know, a lot of times most people, when they come to college, they have stood out, you know, in their high school or on their team. It's kind of just been them and maybe a few others, where you've got all those same people coming together at college. Then you've got the upperclassmen. So, you know, you have to step your game up, you know, to their level. So it's a little overwhelming when you, things that you do that were easy, maybe on the high school level, when you come to college, you know, everybody's kind of either where you are or above. So that was probably the biggest challenges that you had to really improve your game in order to compete.
Do you remember the level of the OVC when you played? Were you kind of impressed with the talent and just across the board in the LVC? I know Morehead State, you guys had a pretty good team, but I know there were some very good teams, you know, Tennessee Tech and Middle Tennessee and some of those teams back then. And how were you impressed with the level of basketball in the OVC when you started and as you progressed through your career?
I think that the talent there was just as, you know, high as any other league, you know, maybe not now. I think it's so distributed, you know, as far as there's so many more conferences, there's so many more levels, but I think the OVC was just as competitive as any of the other levels, especially those teams that you mentioned, like the Tennessee Techs and the Middle Tennessees. I think the talent on those teams were, I would put them up against, you know, any women's conferences, you know, then and now.
Some of those teams, I guess, were ranked in the top 25 even back then. So, yeah, you had to play against some stiff competition, I know, right off the bat. Let's go into a little bit, you know, about your playing career. I know that I don't know all the circumstances, but just kind of talk a little bit about, I know you did have a coaching change and what the differences were from different coaches, and what types of lessons can someone learn when they have to, you know, kind of in the middle of their career change coaches? And I know coach was here, but, you know, that's got to be difficult a little bit for some people to have different coaches and be able to adapt to different styles.
Yeah, I think it's tough all the way around sometimes, because the person that recruits you knows you, they picked you, you know, so then you have someone else to come in, and she was our assistant coach that took on the head coaching job. So therefore she did know me. She, you know, respected where I was as a player and, you know, respected my talents. But I think it's different when it's not the person that actually chose you. But it was fortunate for me that I played under both coaches, because she was the assistant at the time. And so, but it is a big adjustment, I think. And there's different coaching styles. And so it was kind of easy to go from the coach that I had to the coach that I ended up being with, because Coach Wells was a little bit more vibrant, and he was very bold in his expression and his passion for the sport. And so she was more passive and, you know, kind of on a quieter end of things, and she didn't have that same aggressive approach. So it was kind of easy. If it had been vice versa, it might have been a little alarming, you know, to go from someone that, you know, had such a vibrant personality to someone that was more passive. So
I know I've heard Coach Wells, and I've met him, and obviously won a lot of games here at Morehead State. But yeah, I guess he was very passionate. It would be a good word. He really wanted to win, and I guess he kind of let you know if you weren't living up to expectations, right?
Absolutely, that's putting it nicely. But you know, he made us better. He really did. And if you could survive his coaching style, I think it just made you better all around, and it prepared you really, you know, for what was to come, you know, in your career and, you know, just in life. So, you know, it's just all what you're used to. I had a high school coach was pretty much mirrored the way that he was. So it wasn't a big change for me. You know, someone in yelling didn't really, you know, freak me out too bad, because I had a high school coach was just as passionate. So that was good for me.
What were some, and you don't have to get into all of them, I know there was a lot, but maybe some memorable games or memorable wins you had, or even just memorable times, road trips, anything that stands out in your mind that you remember as, you know, maybe to this day that kind of stuck with you in your time at Morehead State?
Yeah, I think there were several things when you think about the memories, but the road trips are special. You know, I don't think there's anyone that plays sports that don't, you know, have memories that they always probably still talk about to this day. You know, just the sisterhood that was formed, and just the camaraderie, you know, just being together on those trips. You're away from your family and you just form a bond and a friendship with, you know, the people that you play with. And we just got to see a lot of nice arenas. You know, we got to play in a lot of nice venues. We got to go to some nice states and cities and things and places that we may have to get to travel, you know, places that we maybe normally wouldn't get to go to. So, you know, that was, you know, those are always great memories. And you talk about those games and those places. As far as the games themselves, you know, playing UK, you know, in Memorial Coliseum, that was probably something that stands out, because for an OVC to play, you know, such a good team and a ranked team, and to play with them, you know, I think they knew we were there, and I think they respected us after, you know, we got into the game, and that was really memorable. And just, you know, times in the dorm when you're there, and it's usually this, the basketball team or the athletes, everybody's home for the holidays and things like that, you know, board games and card games and, you know, just hanging out, you know, in the dorms, you know, there's stories that, you know, probably what goes on in the dorm stays in the dorms type deal. But, you know, we have things that we laugh about, just funny things that, you know, we experience that, that we'll always cherish and always remember.
Didn't have social media back then and no yeah. evidence, right? So. But actually, I'm looking at one of our media guides from when you played, and you did put biggest sports thrill was playing the University of Kentucky in your senior media guide. So there you go.
Yeah.
I think anybody who's from Kentucky, obviously, men's or women's, that's kind of the big thrill, you know, get to go to Lexington, and no matter what school you're at, that's kind of the to play in the big arena. And like I said, you guys competed really well. I apologize. I need to go. Should have researched if you ever won against UK, but I think there were some close games, if not wins there.
Right.
Your senior year, you were able to. I guess you had been kind of a part-time starter and then kind of more of a full-time starter your senior year. But I was looking at some of the stats and what was the difference in maybe your first couple of years? Because your senior year. All of a sudden, I think you were leading the team in scoring about 16 points a game and a lot of assists. And did you feel like it was a time for you to really step up and be that leader? And then, you know, the stats kind of came with it, I guess. But how did you feel as you became a senior and knew that you had to be more a leader?
I think that does come with it. As a senior, you do kind of take on that role. I think just how I kind of, you know, evolved. From freshman to senior year, I came in and had a great freshman year as well. And I had some good games, got to start some games. And I think I really peaked, you know, maybe too soon, you know, as a freshman, if there's such a thing, because my sophomore year, I kind of plateaued. Then I kind of started getting back into my group, finding my spot, finding my position, and just working on, you know, my overall game. And then by the time you become a senior, just with the maturity itself and then taking on the leadership role, I think all that just kind of comes together and it ended up being a good year for me.
Let's kind of go into a little bit about, you know, your career after Morehead State. Just tell us a little bit about what you've been able to accomplish and some of the jobs and careers that you've had and give a little insight into that. And then we'll kind of go and talk about that a little bit. And then also some stuff with obviously the alumni. I know you're very big into the alumni at Morehead State. So just tell us a little bit about your career after Morehead State.
Well, after I finished up with my basketball career, I stayed on as a graduate assistant for a year and then I finished my master's. So after that, I started in, you know, looking to try to get into the workforce, and I sold insurance for about 13 months. I was sending my resume out, you know, just different places, just trying to find my fit. And I really didn't have a specific, you know, job that I was looking for. I was just trying to, you know, get my foot in the door. I did want to be somewhere in management. I wanted to be, you know, in the business realm, but that's a pretty, you know, big area. So I did get some good training and some good background with sales and selling insurance. I taught briefly at a little business college here, taught some accounting classes, and was still sending my resume out and was able to get on at the Jockey Club, which is a thoroughbred registry here in Lexington. And I've actually been with them ever since. So this will be my 30th year 33 for me.
Wow.
Jockey Club. And about 9 years ago, I kind of was contracted or leased out to a nonprofit called the Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance. So I'm still an employee of the Jockey Club, but I'm 100% dedicated, you know, and also an employee of the Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance. And what we do is we accredit organizations that take in the Thoroughbreds after they finish their racing career. And we give them grants to help them out with the horses because they try to find new careers, new jobs, new homes. It can be anywhere from, you know, just a retirement place for them or, you know, just retraining them to take on a different role to help, you know, even with servicemen that have PTSD, with children that come from troubled homes, autism, you know, and so they even do other disciplines with them, such as dressage and, you know, jumping and things like that. So that's what I do now is I am the accreditation and grants manager, and I oversee that process to help those organizations submit their applications. You know, I review those and kind of make sure that they get all the requirements in that they need in order to, you know, get that grant. So that's what I'm doing now. That's what I've been doing the last 9 years.
Wow, it really does sound exciting, honestly. I mean, for those, and I'm not originally from Kentucky, but obviously I've been here about 15 years and realized just how big the equine industry is in Kentucky. And it's not just you see it out on the racetrack, but like you mentioned, there's a lot more that goes into the industry. And I guess you've kind of lived that firsthand being in Kentucky and just the different aspects of racing and equine industry and everything that goes on with it. And yeah, you know, those horses, they still got a lot of life after they race, especially, you know, the ones you see in the Derby, they're not very old. And so just kind of talk about that and just how big the horse industry really is in Kentucky and what it takes and just some of the things that like you've seen that are beyond the racetrack, I guess.
Absolutely. And it, first of all, you know, the equine industry, you mentioned it provides so many jobs for Kentuckians and those that have, you know, gravitated to the state for that and have a love for the animal. I didn't have any background as far as, you know, thoroughbreds go or the horse industry being from the eastern part of the state. But, you know, Lexington is kind of like, you know, the horse capital of the world. We like to say that and we consider it to be that. And I think things have kind of come full circle for me because when I started out with the Jockey Club, I was mainly responsible for the registration side of things. So registering the foal, you know, as a baby, making sure it's certified, so to speak, so that it can be able to race, you know, or breed down the road, kind of makes it legit. I think we would kind of compare that to the American Kennel Club for dogs, you know, just make sure they're registered and then choose the path that the owner decides to take it down. But, you know, people see racing, they see the Derby and they see, you know, the Triple Crown and all that's great. It all matters. But, you know, what about afterwards? Like you said, there's a whole lot of horses that don't make it. And even the ones that do, normally they go on to a better home, you know, but some don't. And I commend, you know, these organizations that take these thoroughbreds in to make sure that they do have, you know, a career or just a life, you know, after they come off the racetrack because of all the years that they've given us and, you know, the livelihood that they provided for us that work in the industry. So it's only fair, you know, that we take care of them on the other end of things. So it's kind of come full circle because I'm coming full circle with my job. So I kind of started out with the thoroughbred, you know, in his early years. And now I'm trying to help them, you know, find a home or find retirement. And I think it's just kind of funny how it's all kind of come full circle.
Do you know now if someone wants, I know there's a couple of farms and even the horse park, can folks go, I don't know, I guess, I don't know if adoption is the right word or can they go visit, can they become involved in a retired horse as an individual or as a person, or how does that kind of work?
Absolutely. We have some local places. We actually accredit, you know, 81 groups now that are accredited with us all over the United States, even in Canada and one in Puerto Rico. But in addition to those actual groups, they have facilities as well that could be in different areas in different states. And there's about 170 of those. So people are always looking for someone that can take, you know, the horses in instead of, you know, thinking about placing those horses, which they could contact those organizations. It would be nice if more people, especially they have the resources to take, you know, take a horse there and they could reach out, you know, even by calling the Thoroughbred Aftercare Line, they could start with our groups. And that way, you know, that would give them someone to contact to know either how to become accredited if they wanted to do that, or if they just want to take one horse. So if they have the farms and the land, whatever, they could adopt. They could go to these places that the horses have already been retrained, and they could be available as a pet, you know, or something for their children, or if the children are wanting to do other things in the equine field itself. They could reach out to these accredited organizations and adopt a horse. And that would be a place to start, or even if they want to take the horse in themselves and become an accredited organization, that would be even something they could do too. Of course, they can't do that with one or two horses. They have to have, you know, a minimum of at least five thoroughbreds. But still, everybody's, whether it's one, you know, or 100, you know, it takes all. But they could reach out to those places and adopt those horses and give them a home. That would be awesome.
Wow, that's really cool to think about. You know, when you think about it, you know, well, you go adopt a cat or a dog, but if you can afford it, or if you can have the resource, what a great way to kind of have a horse live out its legacy. You know, I mean, that it's given a lot, and especially here in Kentucky, they're really heroes. Almost some of them are, when you think about it.
There's your athlete, you know.
Right.
Think about that way, but what a great athlete, you know, the thoroughbred itself. I mean, it's.
Let's go into a little bit about the, I know you've been really active with Morehead State alumni, and just kind of what the importance is for having a strong alumni base and being involved with your alma mater. And some of the opportunities, I think a lot of people miss out sometimes when they leave. Well, I'm out of here. I'm not going to really do much. But, you know, we have the once an eagle, always an eagle kind of motto at Morehead State. And I think you've really lived that. And just talk a little bit about the importance of being involved and some of the things that you've seen in having that strong alumni base for Morehead State University.
Well, first of all, I just feel like it's the right thing to do. It's the way to give back. You know, I feel like so much was given to me, you know, from the scholarship all the way through my academia, you know, just the friends and the professors and the teammates, you know, that have kind of molded me. And I feel like that's the least we can do, is just give back to the university, just to say thanks. And then what it does is kind of gives the opportunity a chance to network through us. And we can, you know, reach out to our family or those friends that have children, or just people we meet in our community, to send them, you know, to Morehead and share with them, you know, our experience and what a good university it is, so that therefore they can, you know, maybe reach out and want to send their kids on, you know, to MSU. So I think it's so important. But who better than someone that has been there, someone that has lived it? You know, you're not just talking this, but as an alumni and then still being involved, it shows them, you know, just how much, you know, you're dedicated to this university. And I think that sells, you know, and I think we have an obligation to do that, to help the university grow.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we do have a great alumni base and Morehead State, a lot of proud alums in all areas, and, you know, not just our athletic department. There's so many people out there that have represented Morehead State in so many fields and professional fields, and it's great, you know, even when they get recognition, but when they're involved, it really, I think it shows just how strong our university is around the world. Even, you know, you got people everywhere that are Morehead State alums. And especially, like, you know, obviously on our end, athletes, but like I mentioned, you know, just all sorts of areas. And we probably even have lots of people working in your industry, in the equine industry, I'm sure, here in Kentucky.
Absolutely. We have a great program there at the university. And I know people are talking about sending their kids to vet school. I just see people see my license plate, or they'll see a decal or something I have, and it, you know, gives you an opportunity to strike up a conversation. And I was washing my car the other day in Lake, because I noticed your Morehead sticker, you know. And I was hoping she was thinking I was a student, but but we got the chattering and laughing about that. And I told her it had been a while since I had attended school, but that I, you know, definitely was an alumni. And she shared that her daughter, you know, was going to be going to university, one in nursing school and one in the vet program, you know. And it's an awesome program. I've got to go and tour and, you know, go back to the school and look at some of the improvements that's been done on campus, and it's amazing what Morehead has to offer. You know, not only did they have that when I was there, so I felt like they were ahead of their time, you know, even from our dorms and to all the facilities where we played our sports and even our classes. But now it's on a whole different level. So I thought, gosh, wouldn't it be neat to go back, you know? But then, you know, people ask, would you rather have gone, you know, then at the time I went or now? And I think, you know, the time I went was for me, you know, if I had to pick, that's all I know. So it worked for me. And, you know, I hats off to these kids, you know, that are so innovative and into all this technology and have all these new opportunities, you know, where we didn't, like you talked about social media. I mean, something as simple as that, you know, we didn't even have a cell phone. So, you know, but it was good for us then. I think, you know, what was for us, and, you know, what's for now is for now. And it's just good to see things progress, because that means, you know, we're improving and we're trying to do better.
Speaking of things you enjoy, let's talk a little bit about what, when you're not at work or doing a podcast like this, I guess, I'd read somewhere you, I don't know if this is still true, you did enjoy or still enjoy running. And what are some other things that that you enjoy when you're kind of in your free time?
I love watching sports always. You know, I always am watching a game. Some, if something's on, you know, sports related, I'm still heavily into that. But for me personally, I do, as my outlet, I did take up running. You know, I think when you're an athlete, people either tend to see you that way, or you feel like you have a certain standard, I guess, you should have in regards to your health and, you know, just your body, so on and so forth. So I did take up running, and actually kind of got a little obsessed about it and was running some 5Ks for charity and things. And then I graduated to half marathons and even ran a marathon. And
oh, wow.
I did one marathon. That was kind of a one and done thing for me. But
yeah, a lot of people, that's kind of on your list, you know, the runners. I know there's some that run them all the time, but the runners always say, you know, I've got to run that marathon at one point in my life. So you've done it.
Yeah, I got that one, checked that one off. But I did do several half marathons. I thought that was a good range, you know, a good amount of miles to try to train for and to do on a regular basis. It didn't really break my body down, but I did that for several years. But I still now run about 3 days a week. And then I try to participate in any kind of charity run, the 5Ks. I try to hit all the cancer runs and, you know, the Race for the Cure and literacy, anybody that kind of has anything as far as charitable, you know, type races, which they usually are, I usually participate in them. But with COVID, of course, all those were pretty much canceled. So I did a ton of things virtual where it was on the honor system. And a lot of my friends and I, we kind of competed through that and challenged ourselves to go out and do, you know, the 5Ks for hunger or, you know, whatever the need was here through COVID. So I did a bunch of virtual, I guess, 5Ks. They weren't as hard because you can kind of do them at your own pace, but I do still enjoy running quite a bit. I do try to do about 3 days a week. I usually run about 12 to 15 miles, you know, a week, but I go about 4 miles or so each time out. And it's just real refreshing. It's a good outlet. And it's just a way to get out, especially now when we're so isolated. So I still enjoy running. And I also enjoy reading. I like to read a lot. I don't have anything specific. If somebody says there's a good book, I'm usually on it. I do try to do something light because in my work, I'm reading a lot and reviewing a lot of applications and things. So I like to read something that, you know, it's not real heavy, but that's something I like to do. I spend a lot of time at my church. I'm very active in my church. I'm a member of St. John Missionary Baptist Church, and I'm a trustee there, and I'm very active in my church, and that you'll catch me there a lot of times if I'm not out running. And then I just love, you know, hanging out with my friends and my family. I love board games and card games and, you know, just getting together as, you know, watching games on TV. And so this once again, this whole COVID thing has really shut all that down. And it's been hard, you know, when you're used to fellowshipping with people in the way that I do. That's, you know, something I love to do. So just been trying to talk to people through Zoom and through conference calls and, you know, drive-bys, if you will, and things like that. But that's the things that I really enjoy doing in my spare time.
I really appreciate you kind of giving an insight into your career and your life, and very interesting. And I really appreciate you taking the time to join us on our podcast. And this is episode number 11, where it's really interesting. I've spoken to a lot of different alums, and everyone has a good story to tell. And you're definitely one of them. And once again, Janice Tolles, we really appreciate it. And looking forward to everything as we move forward.
Thank you so much. And good luck with the podcast.
That is Janice Tolles, women's basketball alum here on Talon Talk. That'll wrap it up for this edition. We'll be back for more. And you can join, as always, listen on Spotify, and MSUEagles.com is where the hub for the podcast are. Usually out Wednesdays, Thursdays each week. So check it out. But once again, I want to thank Janice, and join us again next time.
This episode of Talent Talk is presented by the Morehead State Legacy Club. The Legacy Club is a part of the Eagle Athletic Family Fund and provides former Morehead State University student athletes the opportunity to maintain a lifelong connection with MSU athletics. This is an exclusive group of former MSU student athletes who understand the commitment and spirit to be an Eagle. If you are an MSU student athlete, make sure to join your former teammates in supporting the growth and success of MSU athletics. Visit MSUEagles.com today.